Well, here we are again. This is Bob Brundage, and the date is December the 2nd, 1996, and we're in Hagerstown, Maryland, and today we're talking to the present chairman of Rondolab, Irv and Betty Easterday. So, Irv and Betty, tell me a little bit about life before round dancing. Where were you born and brought up and that type of thing? How'd you get together?
We were both born in Hagerstown. Irv was born in Hagerstown, Maryland, and I was born in Ohio.
Okay.
But as a small child, my parents moved to Hagerstown. We both went to high school together. We graduated the same year, but we did not date until after high school. Irv was an athlete in high school, and I was involved in a lot of activities at school, but from the time I was 2 years old until I was 17, I took dance lessons. Tap, ballet, modern dance, social ballroom, that was part of my life.
Great.
When Irv went to college after high school, he went to Springfield College in Massachusetts, which is a physical education college,
right.
And part of his college studies was all forms of dance. So he was involved there with square dancing, round dancing, contras and line, tap
modern.
And ballet and modern dance.
Yeah. In high school, I did play in the band for a while before I got heavily involved in the athletic side of it.
Okay.
And I played the trumpet, so we do have, both of us have somewhat of a musical background. I guess
right.
You played some piano too, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yeah. And in college, we were married, and I was working my way through college, so to speak, and Al Brundage had a weekend at Springfield College.
Yeah, I was there.
And Dick Jones, who was a square dance caller later
right.
on,
sure.
and I were roommates
okay.
at Springfield College,
uh-huh.
and we were making the beds in the dorms for the square dancers that Al had brought in there for
oh,
that
yeah.
weekend. And I can remember both of us looking through the window in the old East Gym at Springfield College and saying, well, boy, that's something we'll never get involved in.
Uh-huh.
And Dick ended up being a top caller, and we ended up being in round dancing.
Right.
So that was kind of an interesting happening in our early years as far as squares and rounds are concerned.
Isn't that interesting?
We were married in 1951. We graduated from high school in 48, married in 51, and lived in Massachusetts for a couple of years while Irv finished college,
yeah.
then moved back to Hagerstown, Maryland, where Irv accepted a position in a high school about 30 miles outside of Hagerstown. Then he accepted a position at our local community college as the first director of athletics in the state of Maryland in a community
mm-hmm.
college program.
Mm-hmm.
His job, because he was a basketball coach and involved in teaching history in the college, kept him busy at nights, and we didn't have very much time
right.
to do things together. So we decided that if we found something we both liked to do, that we would give up at least one thing and spend an evening together. So I tricked him by getting him to go to a square dance class.
Right.
And during the first evening of class, he said to me, why do we have to wait till next week? Why can't we do this again tomorrow night?
Right.
And the caller was Curly Custer.
There you go. Okay.
So we did our beginning square dance classes with Curly Custer in Hagerstown, and Curly also used some what we now would call easy level rounds and
right.
line dancing and circle dancing
yeah.
with our beginners classes. It didn't take us long to realize that the round dancing was one of the parts of the activity that we really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1959 we started our square dance lessons. And in the spring of 1960, we went to our first festival. Within another year, we went to our first full week of dancing at West Point
mm-hmm.
with Al Brundage and Jack Jackson.
And Les Kocher
was there. Okay. The Round Dance people there at that weekend were Tom and Betty Jane Johnston.
Right.
And Tom and Betty Jane were very influential with us for Round Dancing. Curly would bring them into our town occasionally during the year, and they would spend a weekend teaching new round dances to our group, and then it was our job to follow through with that when it was over. Curly, for about 6 to 8 months, when we decided we wanted to do a round dance club, for several months he ran the club in his home, and then finally decided that that and square dancing were just too much for his schedule, because he was still working then full time.
Right.
And the group looked at us and said, "You're it."
You
actually, in the beginning, there was another couple whose last name was Hambly, Derek and Aggie Hambly. Derek worked for our government in the National Park Service, and they said, "We'll help you with teaching, and we can get you a facility at the Camp David area."
Oh, yes.
So we danced in a facility at Camp David that had no heat, a nice wooden floor, and a fireplace. So we danced in the winter in slacks, because it was very cold, in front of an open fire on Sunday evenings. And that's how...
Got hot at one end, cold at the other.
Right. And that's how we started with a round dance club. Eventually we moved it to a local fire station that had a facility, and we used the fire hall for dancing.
And that was basically because the Hamleys got transferred to another area, right, as far as his job was concerned.
Yeah.
We continued to square and round dance with Curly and other leaders in the town, and then there was a point of time when Curly was no longer calling for the Saturday night club, and we became pretty instrumental in hiring many of the callers from out of the area to come in on Saturday nights. So two Saturday nights a month, the Dixie Square Nators brought in people like Louis Calhoun, Harry Lackey,
Al Brundage, the Cotlin, Steve Cotlin, when he was very young,
John Marshall when he was very young.
Right, and who's the young kid in Virginia?
Tim Mariner? Not Tim. We'll think about that.
Yeah. He was just at the Delaware Valley this last time. I have a hard time with his name. I don't know why, because we liked him very, very much and still do. He's still calling. Does quite a nice job.
Tom Miller?
No.
All right. Sorry. Anyway, we did that, and we had 2x2s at that time. And I would say those years were probably the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
Until probably close to the 80s, when that club went for about 10 years. And we did 2x2s in that group.
We had Dick Fledger in. We had some of the old-time greats, from the East Coast, to come in and do square sports.
Right. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in the early 60s, we also had two round dance clubs and a beginner's class that we ran three nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 60s, we built a home just outside of Hagerstown. We actually built a dance hall and put a house on top of it. And so all of our classes were run in our home for 20 years anyway, close to 20 years. And three nights a week, as I said, we did beginner's classes, an easy level round dance group, a more advanced round dance group, and then for about 10 years we did a very advanced round dance session in our home, along with the square dance thing. Our first festival outside of Hagerstown was in 1964. We were asked by Louis Calhoun if we would fill in for a round dance couple from Pennsylvania, because this couple could not get off work. And we did a festival in Atlantic City then with Louis Calhoun and a man whose name was Larry DePetro. He went by the name of Larry D., and that was our first festival outside of Hagerstown. That was in probably 1964. We began to travel then. It mushroomed from one weekend to another, and by 69 and early 70s, we were doing 20 to 25 weekends a year away from home.
Wow.
Our first Square Dance National was the National in Philadelphia, which I think was in 1967. And we were so excited when we had a call from the Round Dance chairman of that year. They called us on a Sunday night while our group was dancing and asked us if we would teach at the Square Dance National in Philadelphia. And we just were beside ourselves with excitement, couldn't believe it. And of course we said yes. And we really have always been very, very lucky at being given a slot that's always seemed to be at the right place at the right time.
Right.
They gave us what we know now was the top spot for teaching. It was immediately following the Round Dance Showcase on Saturday at 1 p.m.
There you go.
The showcase was, I think, from 11 to 1. We immediately followed it, and we wrote a dance called
Southtown USA.
Southtown USA, which was on a Belco. And the hall was filled, and it was very, very exciting for us. And as a result of that time slot, and that our being very lucky at that time, we were offered an awful lot of festivals and began very shortly to work the larger festivals in the country.
Interesting commentary on Southtown USA. We had presented that particular routine to Grand Records, and they turned it down, and we gave it to Belco, and they pressed it. And became a hit at Square Dance National. They sold all the records that they had there at the time. So that made us feel pretty good that one outfit turned us down, the other accepted, and then we made a hit out of it.
Yeah. And of course, probably Grand was better known as a label than Belco.
Yeah, in those days, that's true. And that's the reason we sent it to Grand first, hoping that they would do it.
Right.
And then in 1969, we went to the Square Dance National in Seattle. That was our second Square Dance National. And our first experience with renting a trailer, pulling it on the back of a station wagon and dragging our children, who were 11 and 13 at the time, and Irv's mother, who was in her 60s, but she was an elderly 60. In those days, in 1969, when you were that age, you never went anywhere without your long line bra and your panty kirtle, and you always you never wore slacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, it was a very interesting time for us. We've never rented a trailer since then. We've never owned one, and we don't intend to. It was maybe not a very good experience, but
right.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And at that national, we taught a dance called Kahlua Shag, which was written by a couple from Hagerstown, Tootie and Phil Phillips, who will come into our round dance history a little later in this presentation.
Good.
But they wrote this dance called Kahlua Shag, and it too became an immediate hit. In fact, it was so popular that when we would walk into the other halls at the Square Dance National, in either square or round dance halls, the people would say, "There come those kids." We were kids then.
Yeah, right.
who taught Kahlua Shag. Let's have them do it and let's cue it. So they even stopped the square dancing in Seattle for Kahlua Shag to be done. It was an easy level round that was very popular.
Well, easy then, of course, because it had the shag in it, which is pretty tricky for round dancers in those days.
Yeah.
But again, we were at the right place at the right time, and that was an opportunity for people on the West Coast to get to know who we were.
Right.
And as a result of that, in 1969, we were beginning to get invitations to come to the western part of the country.
Right.
And so that's really how our round dancing got started. We feel very strongly when we work with new teachers now, when they say to us, how can we get started in this activity, we feel very strongly that they need to attend as many square dance functions as possible. Mm-hmm. That's what got us going, and that's what got us started, and,
sure.
and we have a lot to owe to the square dance callers and the square dance community
right.
for helping us along our way.
Right. Well, the square dance community has a lot to owe to you.
Let's see. Now what? Where shall we go from here?
Well, let's see. How about any trip to overseas?
Yes. Bob Osgood called us in the probably 1970-71 and said, I understand, Betty, that you're getting ready to graduate from college, which was quite true. I didn't start college until I was 36, and I graduated in 1972. And just 4 years later, not quite 4 years later. And he said, I'd like to offer you a college graduation gift. And, of course, I said, what? And he said, well, how would you and Irv like to go to Europe with one of my trips? And, of course,
Jerry Helt was the caller.
Jerry Helt was the caller that was going along.
Jerry and Kathy.
Yeah.
And, of course, we said yes. And then when I got a job, I had to say to my school principal, this is fine. I really would like to have this position, but I need to tell you that next year in August, late August and early September, we have an invitation to go to Europe, and I'm going to accept, we have accepted that invitation. So, of course, my principal let me out of school for that. So we did our first trip to Europe with Bob Osgood, Bob and Becky. Actually, they did not go along, but the Helts went along, and
Milo,
who was the travel agent and guide that mm-hmm. Bob Osgood always used, Milo went along with us.
Yeah.
And we took, as I remember, there were 74 dancers, and the Helts, and Irv, myself, and Milo, and it was quite an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Bob to thank for getting us started with the travels, and now we've done probably every 2 years since then, we have done trips either with Al Brundage or on our own or for Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just come from Europe this year, and we'll be going to China in 1997.
Okay.
And it's sold out already.
And it's already sold out. We've been advertising for a month, and there are 40 dancing people going with us to China.
And I said that it wouldn't go, wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
Of course, it's sold out faster than anything we've ever done.
Yeah, right. Well, what other exotic places have you been?
Exotic.
No,
lots of exotic places. Okay. Our trips have taken us to South America, to Australia, to the Orient, to Canada, to Alaska, to Europe, many times to Europe, and so we've seen a lot there.
We've done Scandinavia twice, and we've done Central Europe three times,
uh-huh.
and we did a trip almost exclusively in Spain and Portugal just 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and that was a very interesting trip too. So we've seen probably half the world as a result of our trips with dancers, and
that's
a really a neat way to go, because you have people with common interests.
Right.
They have something to talk about when you're on the long bus rides or something like that, or the long plane ride.
Yeah. Right.
Now, the other thing that we've been very fortunate about is that people from overseas, dancers from overseas, have invited us to come overseas to teach.
Uh-huh.
So in that light, we have taught in Germany. We have taught in Australia. And we're going to be returning to Australia. We were there in 94. We're going again in 98. We have taught in Japan. And, of course, in Canada. So that's a different kind of a trip when you're hired to come.
Right.
And we've always managed to be able to stay a little bit extra time and visit with the dancers.
Right.
And not only dance the weekend sessions, but also have time with the local dancers.
Yeah.
And in the year 2000, we've been invited to go to Czechoslovakia.
All right.
So we'll do that.
Yeah.
And the thing with Bob, that was in association with the, I forget whether they called it the Universal Dance Festival or
on Labor Day
International
weekend,
Dance Festival or something like that, which Bob was pretty much in charge of, I think. He set it up, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the healths were the health. Jerry was the caller. And, of course, we did the rounds, and we did it in Heidelberg at the base there at that time.
Right. Well, that's great. Okay.
Okay. Other things that we have done and been very, very proud of is that 28, 29 years ago, we started the first all round dance weekend in the East Coast. Up until that time, Joe and S. Turner had sponsored what they called roundicades. They had a roundicade and a Canadacade, and their cades were basically round dancing, but they always had a caller come in on Saturday night to do squares and rounds on the Saturday night program. And we felt that there might be a place for an all-round dance weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So our first one was started at Great Kakapin State Park near Berkeley Spring, West Virginia, a very small hall that we limited to 35 couples, and that was really squeezing them in.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular weekend lasted well over 20 years, and then we moved it to another facility that was a little bit larger. The state park was continually raising their prices and not really upgrading the facility, and we felt we needed to move to that because of that.
Sure.
We called our dance weekend, which eventually became many dance weekends, Roundarama. And we're very proud of our Roundarama weekends and our Roundarama name. We travel now with all our trips are under the same name.
Yes.
There have been times when we have had as high as 12 and 15 Roundaramas across the United States in a year's time. We have had Roundaramas in New Mexico, in Texas, California, Oregon, Kentucky, Florida,
Louisiana,
Mississippi,
Indiana,
Maryland, New England,
Massachusetts,
all over the United States. And the way these roundaramas have happened is a round dance person will say to us, a teacher or a dancer, we'd really like you to come to our area and do a roundarama. Would you do that? And we'll say, well, what we really need is someone to be an angel for us and locate a facility and take the registrations, and we will pay you to do that for us. And that's how it's gotten started.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we have there is a Florida Roundarama that is still going. The one in California is probably in its 24th or 25th year.
Wow.
It's gone continually. Not always with the same angel.
Mm-hmm.
If one angel says, because of illness or for one reason or another, we're not going to do it anymore, it's always happened that another angel has come forward. Mm-hmm. And we always have to say, we always announce, well, we're not, this is the last one, and the next thing we know, it's not the last one.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Roundarama now in here in our hometown that is in its 27th year.
Okay.
And we have one in Cherry Hill College Park, Maryland, at Cherry Hill Park, which is an RV park that is inside the Beltway of Washington, D.C. And we do two of there a year. We go to York, Pennsylvania once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them now, we hire someone else to work with us so that we bring national round dance people into other areas to work with us, people like Bill and Carol Goss, Wayne and Barbara Blackford, Brent and Mickey Moore, Kenji and Nobuko Shibata, Peter and Beryl Barton. those are the kind of people who have come in to work with us at our weekends now.
The Childers, when they were...
Bob and Jim Childers came in when they were in the activity.
Mm-hmm.
Now also, we are celebrating this coming year, our 25th year in the state of Indiana for a week-long Round Dance Institute, which we put together, as I said, 24 years ago, in order to stress dance improvement and to work with teachers and dancers in improving dance techniques.
Mm-hmm.
This is a week-long activity, and for the first 20 years, we held it at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. Now we've moved to Purdue University, which is an enlarged facility. We have two ballrooms, of each one is well over 7,000 square feet, and they are side by side so that we can utilize both ballrooms
at the same time.
We limit to 90 couples only because we feel that we need to be able to give as much individual attention as possible, and we hire three other staff members. We hire a full-time sound person, Bob and Joanne Coffeen from the center part of the country are professional sound people and round dance teachers, so they do our sound for us, and our staff rotates again between people like Bill and Carol Goss, Brent and Mickey Moore, Wayne and Barbara Blackbird, the Shibatas, the same top-level people that we have mentioned before.
Right.
And we usually have three staff members and teaching staff members and then the full-time sound person.
And
we also bring in a young man from Connecticut whose name is Randy Rohrbach. Randy's expertise in the round dance world is cueing. Randy cues for almost all of the weekends that we do on the East Coast, and he cues for this week-long thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting also that he is a challenge square dance caller and has clubs in the Connecticut area.
I've danced for him several times.
Yes, we're quite proud of Randy, and he does extremely well, and he's becoming pretty well-known nationally for his cueing also. He's also choreographed some really nice routines.
Mm-hmm.
So this full week that we do in Indiana is extremely successful, and it's interesting to note that at this point in time, I have 127 couples on the waiting list to come to this facility that limits to 90 couples every year, and we're starting our 24th year of that.
Then we have also teacher seminars or schools to teach teachers how to teach. And we've done that for
15 years. Our 16th one is scheduled for this coming June in 97.
We've held them in various parts of the country. We started out in the middle Midwest. Mm-hmm. We did one in Kenosha, Wisconsin. We did several in Clifton Falls, Indiana, which was a state park with a very nice facility. And we've done one in California. And we've done several here in our local community. That way we can stay at home and bring the teachers to us, which works out pretty good.
That's a
and I guess we have trained well over 250 teachers in like your square dance color schools, same type of thing. And we're quite proud of that too. And a lot of them, a lot of these teachers are now board members for Round 11, which we are proud of. The executive secretary went to one of our schools. She's very proficient as an executive secretary. So the background that they've gotten at our schools, we feel, has helped them to climb the ladder in the round dance picture. At least we hope so.
That's beautiful. Tell me what other, you probably have quite a list of things that you've choreographed yourself. Tell us about some of your You don't need to go into the whole list, but what are some of the
popular? Well, first of all, I'm embarrassed to say we had no idea until about 10 years ago someone was keeping track of how many we had written, and we had already choreographed over the 100 mark.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't even realize that. Some that have been very popular at the easy level, a routine that was on Belco called Steppin' Easy, is still being used with beginners groups.
Right.
We also wrote Hot Java, which is an Al Hurt record that is still being used occasionally.
Right.
Some of those that have, as we moved up the ladder in the level, in phases, which is a roundelab term that is being used now,
right.
A dance called Memory is extremely popular. It's from the theme from Cats. Also, Sugarfoot Stomp was a Hall of Fame dance, and also a dance that has won the Roundelab Classic List and Hall of Fame from URDC. El Coco also.
Mm-hmm.
Sugarfoot Stomp was a Gren record. Let me see. Also, isn't this terrible? I can't even think of titles.
Well, we got one right now that's very, very popular. It's called Boogie Blues. It's a jive, and it was on the top. It was in the top 10. It was in the top 2 or 3 for a full year.
Yeah.
And they phase them out after they've been in the focus for a year. And but we see in the catalogs or in the magazines that it's still being taught some places, even though it's been phased out of the top 10 as far as URDC or the Carousel Group is concerned.
Right.
So Boogie Blues is very, very popular right now for us. And we've done some phase 4 routines like Hey Daddy and Jumbo Mambo and stuff like
that. And Perhaps.
Perhaps.
These are dances that are very popular now.
Is that a phase 4?
Yes,
phase
perhaps
4.
Is.
Perhaps
right.
Is a phase 4.
I think I danced with phase 4.
It's a 4. See there? So...
So let's continue on with our discussion. Go ahead.
All right. We were talking about the videotapes of Roundelab, and I think this is perhaps a good time to mention that several round dance people across the country are putting videotapes, releasing videotapes with routines or figures on them. Most of those are done in someone's dance hall or in a basement, but that doesn't mean that they're not still quite good. About 6-7 years ago, we decided that it was time for Roundorama to put some favorite dances on videotape because we were concerned with losing some of the good old tapes, good old dances. And so we called ours Favorites by Request, Roundorama's Favorites by Request. And we had Brent and Mickey Moore, Wayne and Barbara Blackford, and Irv and myself as the clinicians on these tapes. We did 4 tapes, 6 dances to a tape, and each dance was done twice. Once the whole way through without cues, and once through with cues. And in both instances, we had used 2 cameras so that one camera would focus on the entire body so that body sway and upper body action could be shown. And the second camera zoomed in on the feet so that we had as proper footwork as possible was being done on the video tape. It was very difficult to do these for several reasons. We think that we were perhaps the first and maybe the only people who cleared the legal use of the choreography from the choreographers where possible.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the legal use of the music from the owners of the music. And this is one reason why we have stopped with just 24 dances, because we began to run into problems with the legal use of the music. It became extremely expensive, and in today's society, you just can't go out and use music, and even though it's for educational purposes, it's just not considered proper to use it unless you pay extreme prices for the use of the music. So we have 24 dances completed on 4 videos. And as I said, our goal was to keep some of the old favorites on the tape and available for people in the future rather than the current routines. We have several others that have been taped, but we have not received permission to use the music from the recording companies. So they're sitting in the sidelines waiting for the day when we can put those out. The other thing that has become very popular in the round dance world in the past 15 or more years is what we call figure clinics or dance improvement clinics. Mm-hmm. Roundarama has run a figure clinic at least once a year for teachers and or dancers. We try to keep the number of participants fairly low so that we can do one-on-one as much as possible. Round dancing has become much more involved since we first started in 1959 and 60. Probably in those days, maybe there were fewer than 100 figures that were used in all of the dance routines, and mostly we did two-step and waltz at that time.
Right.
Occasionally there was a polka or a little kind of a soft shoe action, but
mm-hmm.
And the sequences were very short and very repetitive, so that if we using those 100 figures in many different ways, the dances were interesting. But as the round dance society began to become a little more sophisticated, and the need seemed to be there for a little more intricate figures and footwork, we found it necessary for many of us to go to ballroom instructors to improve our technique and our style and to learn as much as possible about dancing. One of the good things about the need for many of us to update our dance technique is that we feel that we have made better dancers out of ourselves and also out of those that we come in contact with. So therefore, figure clinics are very important. When the Round the Lab first did their videotapes, there were over 900 figures that were placed on the videotapes, and that was approximately 10 to 12 years ago. Just this year, Round the Lab has added an additional 240 figures. And these are separate figures. They are not combinations.
Mm-hmm.
When we find a combination figure, we do not plan to put that on the videotape because we feel that's choreography.
Right.
There are many choreographers and many teachers who feel that some of these combinations ought to be put together, but since we can vary the entries and the exits and quite often the positions that we use in our creative choreography,
mm-hmm.
We feel that combinations should not be put on tape.
As they are in square dancing compared to figure.
Combinations are put on in square dancing.
Well, I mean, like Acey Deucey, for example, is
correct.
A combination of two other calls that you just a little different.
Yeah.
Without calling it AC Deuce.
Yeah. Right, and we don't do that. We keep our calls, our figures separate,
right.
And don't put combinations together. We allow the choreographers then, not allow, but we encourage the choreographers to become as creative as they possibly can by using many combinations of figures.
Right.
Dancers are very interested now in clinic work, particularly the dancers that are in the higher phases.
Mm-hmm.
They really want to know how to dance as properly as possible and as correctly as possible. Even though many of us are limited in our skills and in our body movement because of age, we still would like to know how to do it.
Right.
Well, proper technique as far as doing some of these figures is very important in being able to accomplish these figures as well. Regardless of the lack of skills that we may have, if we try to go into something without knowledge, it makes it doubly difficult.
Right.
But with the background and knowledge that a lot of us have obtained over the years, we're able now to show the dancer where this figure comes from and how it escalates out of the simple steps,
right,
like the box and
right,
progressive box and things like that.
Okay.
That in essence, when you learn a new figure, I'd say 90% of the time you're only learning one new step, but you know the prior steps and
right,
what to do in that particular figure.
Right.
And learning the technique of how to perform these things has made a lot easier for a lot of people who have indulged in the figure clinics.
What we also feel is happening to the round dance world is that many teachers are not starting with two-step in their classes, because they realize now, after the education that many of us have managed to pass on or that they themselves are getting, and also the educational materials that Roundelab is giving them, that the two-step is very easily taught after the students have had a little more understanding of dance in general.
Right.
So we really, most of us are starting out now with foxtrot, very basic foxtrot, American foxtrot, and waltz, basic cha-cha, and basic rumba, and basic swing, which is at the phase three level as far as Roundelab is concerned now. And then, once they have spent 10 to 12 weeks learning half a dozen basic figures in each of these rhythms, and it can be done in 12 weeks or less, you can spend 1 to 2 sessions more, and they have everything they need to know about a two-step.
Right.
So phase one and two of round dancing is what we really feel is almost the most difficult part. If we start them right out with a two-step, it becomes very traumatic for a lot of people. But if you can teach them to do a little waltz and a little foxtrot, something they can use on the social ballroom floor, they can use it in line dancing and country dancing, and they can feel very proficient if they go to a high school reunion or a wedding reception. If you can teach them that kind of dancing, then getting them into the round dance picture is much easier. Getting them into the two-step of the square and round dance picture is easier.
And we do something we call associative teaching. And what we try to do is associate all the figures as you move up the ladder with what you've learned prior to learning this next step.
Right.
And we feel that we can associate all the rhythms. We very seldom ever concentrate on one rhythm in an entire evening.
Right.
Because we want the people to be familiar with music and be able to detect what the music is. So we'll give them a foxtrot and a waltz and maybe a cha-cha in one evening, just doing the basic steps.
Right.
And then a couple of evenings down the line, we might do basic cha-cha rumba. Eliminating a step is all you do when you're doing rumba, and then maybe some very, very basic jive. And so now they've learned almost 5 different rhythms in a short period of time, and they start listening to music, and we feel that listening to the music and knowing what the music is doing is one of the important things about dance. And so we do the associative teaching, an awful lot of the associative teaching.
And actually, Roundelab is encouraging associative teaching. That that phrase has been in the Roundelab educational materials for 10 or more years now, I think. We talk about figure families, and associative teaching and learning in relationship to almost all of our educational work now. I remember many, many years ago when Manning Smith would say, we have enough teachers of dances and not enough teachers of dancing. And we wonder now if this is the concept that perhaps he was thinking of, that we really need to stop teaching so many routines, but start teaching
people how to dance.
Right. And that's really very important. We started taking private ballroom lessons in relationship to our round dance activity in the mid-70s, early 70s, I guess.
Okay.
Prior to that time, the only ballroom instruction we had had was local Fred Astaire and Arthur Murray studio stuff that we had picked up locally. Then we started to go to an international ballroom instructor in Washington, D.C. His name was Al France, and he was world-renowned and had won a lot of awards, etc. But what we began to discover is that some of the dancers, had gone out on their own. I'm talking about dancers across the country, not just in our local area, had gone out on their own and gone to private ballroom instruction to learn more, because the little bit they had gotten from their local round dance people began to interest them in dancing, in the full spectrum of dancing.
Right.
So we discovered that there were some dancers out there who seemed to have more knowledge about dance technique than we did. And we felt we better get our act together and become better teachers. So we went to the ballroom instructor basically to improve our own technique and to improve our teaching technique so that we would better understand how we could teach these figures to the dancers. I'll be very honest with you. I still have this, it's not a fear, but it's a concern. The top teachers, round dance teachers in the United States right now, and by top I'm talking about those who do the largest number of national traveling festivals.
Right.
They all have had many years of ballroom instruction. We started in the early 70s. And almost all of them that are traveling now started approximately that time or a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
They all do it. We all go regularly. We all are constantly trying to update our techniques and our knowledge. My concern is that for the younger teachers that are coming in, we were still in our... I was 29 when we started to teach, and Irv was 31, so we were pretty young. We had children, fortunately. Irv's mother lived with us for a long time, and prior to that time she was nearby, so we never had to leave our children with a stranger. When we went away to do festivals or went to work, either grandmother was with them or we took our children with us. In today's society, both mothers and fathers work, and there isn't time for them to spend time with children, to teach round dancing, to take private lessons on their own. It's a different society that we have now. And my concern is that we're going to be hard-pressed to find instructors that have studied and have the knowledge that many of our older instructors have, because we hit the circuit a little later in our lives. We were able to do it a little later in our lives. We have a lot of nice talent out there, a lot of young teachers that have lots of ability, but I'm finding that the dancers are becoming a little more discriminating in who they select to go to festivals to be with. They want to make sure that the person who is teaching has as much or more knowledge than they as dancers have. And it's going to be really hard, I think, for some of the young people to kind of climb to the top of the ladder if that's their wish. And it is a wish of a lot of them. They see people like Bill and Carol Goss and the Moores and the Easterdays and whoever, and they want to be like that. They want to do that.
Right.
And it's going to be difficult because of family commitments, job commitments, and time constraint.
Right. One of the important things that we found out very early on in our ballroom construction was that there was more to dancing than just moving the feet. Our instructor said ground dancers were the best foot rhythm people that he had ever seen. He said, there's no doubt that you have rhythm. He said, your feet move perfectly to the music. He said, but you dance like sticks. And we didn't use our upper body at all. And I think the upper body, the use of hands, for instance, in Latin dancing and things of this nature, have become a very intricate part of round dancing in the phase 5 and 6 level especially.
Right.
And so it was an entirely new concept. And I think we learned some things about anatomy as well as learned some things about dancing when we started taking instruction from this national ballroom instructor. And it was quite interesting to see how the use of the body made the feet work so much easier.
Right.
And so the more intricate and more advanced figures were really not difficult because we knew more how to perform those figures. And it's a very, very interesting concept that we learned there.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's one of the questions I had down to ask you was about international ballroom. Isn't it true that a lot of what we consider the standard basics today in round dancing came from international ballroom?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think the simple box step came from from the ballroom. You know, it always amazed me. We used to be hired to go in certain places, and they said, you cannot use international figures. And I said, you mean I can't use a box? And they look at me kind of funny.
Yeah, right.
But I don't think that round dancing reinvented the wheel. They borrowed from the ballroom people.
Right.
From the very beginning.
Right.
It wasn't a new concept any way, shape, or form. And so it's a matter of everything that we do has actually been filtered down from some other form of dancing.
Sure.
It may be folk dancing, it may be ballroom dancing, may be international ballroom dancing.
Right.
We don't have any international ballroom figures anymore because we call them round dance figures.
Right.
And so we put that international aside.
Yeah.
But they are figures that we have borrowed from the ballroom picture.
A little anecdote. When the Square Dance National was in Oklahoma, I think it was in the 80s, I can't remember again, the dates escape me, Irv was asked by Roundelab to do a tango clinic, which he did, and he started out with Foxtrot, and cued them through, walked them through several sequences of figures, and put on several pieces of Foxtrot music. And then he said, now I want you to do the same thing. I'm going to give you another piece of music, and I just want you to immediately do the same figures. And I will cue you through these figures. Well, we put on tango music. Immediately, you saw the group kind of lower into their legs, took a tango stance, and did the same Foxtrot figures, but to tango music, and they were doing almost entirely tango Manita.
Mm-hmm.
So Manny and Anita Smith still had their booth at the Square Dance National at the time, and someone went to Manny and said, oh, Irv Easterday just did this clinic, and he proceeded to tell them about the clinic. And Manning said to this gentleman, well, I guess it's time now to reveal the secret that the entire routine of Tango Manita came from my ballroom instructor.
Right.
So you see, it's been around a long time.
Yeah, and it didn't start with the new kids on the block.
Right.
Manning Smith went to Ballroom.
Right.
Instructor to get some of the material that he used way back then.
Way back, yeah.
Well, basically the difference between Ballroom and Round Dance is that Round Dance is a cue, Ballroom pretty
yes.
much freestyle.
Actually, yes, it's pre-choreographed. Pre-choreographed sequence to, and everyone, of course, is doing the same thing at the same time. And actually, in most ballroom work, it's also pre-choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
The sequences are not so long, but they're pre-choreographed, and the even though it looks beautiful and looks as if the gentleman is leading the lady through all of these figures in ballroom, they have practiced their sequences together many times.
Right.
So the only thing that we do that's different is that we often, most often, repeat segments of our dances to particular sections of the music, which
right.
makes it different from ballroom.
Right.
And as you said, we do have cueing. And we remember the days when there was no cueing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or very little. But East Coast, I think, almost always has had cueing. The West Coast, they and the Midwest, they sort of came along later as far as the cueing was concerned.
Mm.
I've had a lot of people say to me, well, what is round dancing? And I tell them, it's disciplined ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, it's disciplined in the fact that we all do the same thing at the same time. Where in ballroom, the leader or the man who is doing his own choreography does it when he wants to.
Right.
But we are disciplined to do it when the music and the choreography tells us to do it.
That's a good description. But I hasten to add that I think I had the first brown dance class in Connecticut. And in those days, the dancers were expected to learn the routine.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was called upon to dance, I would cue it one time through. And they would dance the rest of the
yeah.
yeah.
And that's how we learned our round dancing also. Curly would cue it through the beginning, and then we did without cues.
Much the way we do with contras today, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
And then they do it without cues the rest of the time in contras.
Right.
That's nice. That's nice.
I think cueing is here to stay as far as round dancing is concerned.
Really.
Especially with the more intricate rounds that we're doing now.
Oh, yes.
Well, I think when we first started, there were not nearly so many new routines written each month or each year as there is now. I remember when Curly would say, I've just got the latest round and I'm going to teach it to you. And I would think, oh, how exciting. Here's a brand new dance. Well, then when we began to teach and took Round Dancer magazine, we realized that there were maybe 20 dances written every month. And why did he fool me and tell me there was only one?
Yeah.
And of course he wasn't fooling me. He was
right.
just saying, you know, I've got this new one for you.
Right.
And now, of course, there's 50, 60 sometimes a month, depending on in various phases. Yes.
Yes,
in the various phases. Sometimes there's just too many. They can't all get printed in magazines anymore. There are just too many.
Round Dance magazine still operative, though.
Don't think so.
I see.
Kind of doubt it.
I
think about the only thing that's being published now is Cue Sheet magazine.
I see.
Granger out in San Diego.
I can see.
Does that.
Okay. Well, we're getting down near the end of this tape again. I wonder if you'd give me a little overview of your impression of the activity as it stands today. Is it healthy? Is it going to remain healthy? Is it going to go up or go down like square dancing has? Just off the top of your head, what's your impression of how you stand today?
I think it basically depends on the area that you live in. I say it's pretty healthy in this area. And I'd say it's pretty healthy at the higher levels right now.
We're talking about round dancing.
I'm talking about round dancing, yes. And but the major problem that I see in the background is that most of our dancers are getting older. and we do not see a lot of young people coming into the picture. We feel quite fortunate. We have about five young couples that dance with us in the D.C. area.
And just joined our group within the last 3 months.
Yeah, that are in their 30s. But that is unusual. Most of the people are in their 60s or older that are doing the level of dancing that I'm speaking about, 5-6 level. So what is in front of us, we really don't know.
Right.
We're hoping that maybe there are 5-6 couples in every area of the United States that are in their 30s that are interested in round dancing and will get involved. I think also that we've got to get our people from more than just one source. We can't rely only on square dancing.
Right.
One of the reasons for that is that square dancing is not flourishing right now. And if we depend only on what we get from them, we're not going to get much.
Right.
And so we've got to tap other sources as far as people are concerned to get involved. We do a social ballroom class for our college, and we have gotten some people involved in round dancing as a result of taking the social ballroom class with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we tell them there's another activity, it's called round dancing, and try to get them interested in that. Doesn't always work, but at least you get some fresh blood. And a matter of fact, we've put some people in square dancing through that class.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that class for about 25 years.
Yeah.
And still continue to do that.
Well, that should be.
I'm perhaps much more optimistic than Irv is. I just feel that Caller Lab is now trying some other approaches to beginners classes, and I really think it's going to work. By doing the shortened length of classes, 10 or 12 weeks or whatever they call their new system. And I really feel that the round dance picture can remain healthy if we basically do the same thing, which is one of the things for the last several years in Rounda Lab we've been encouraging people to do, as we talked about before, social ballroom with them first and then introduce them into round dancing. I also feel that through country western, we're going to eventually get some people who are looking for a form of dance that is not going to be done in the bars. And round dancing will be their answer, because they're doing, many of them that you see on television now are doing the very same figures and same routines that we do in the round dance world, but they're doing them in a smoky bar atmosphere.
Right.
And that's one of the things that many of us like about round dancing, is that we're not in that kind of atmosphere.
Right.
Like in the square dance activity. We're out of the bar. And I really feel that we'll have some of those people, as they get a little older, they will want out of that atmosphere, but they'll still want to dance. Again, it's being in the right place at the right time.
Right.
Yeah, it's coming in the back door type of thing.
Yeah, right. Is there any effort to do exhibitions or anything like that at the bar, at these bars, or wherever they...
Not for round dancer
people. That's what I mean.
Round dance people, to our knowledge, don't do that.
Yeah, I'm just off the top of my head, say, well, maybe...
That would be the way to go.
Yeah.
You know, what often happens, of course, is that the exhibitions are done in places like nursing homes,
yeah,
or schools.
Thanks a lot.
Or out on the mall, in the center of the mall, because we're going to help open a new store or whatever we're doing.
Right.
And that's really not the place to get new dancers.
Right.
But I do feel that we do have a chance, and I think it's going to improve. I also feel that one of the things that's helping, that may help, is not wearing the very full petticoats that we've worn for the last 15 years.
Right.
When we first started to round dance, our skirts were longer, my petty pants were longer, and my petticoat was not nearly so full. And then over the years, the styles changed. They got shorter, and we all wore 100-yard petticoats and very short skirts. And I was a big defender of that kind of clothing. I thought it was wonderful. I always said that I always felt so feminine when I was dressed in that full petticoat. But I realize now that it was a turnoff for an awful lot of people that probably would have come into the activity if they could have dressed more normally and not in so much costume.
Right.
I do have an objection, however, to permitting the dancers to wear